You open the fridge. There's nothing there. So what's it gonna be? Greasy pizza? Sad drive-through burgers? Dish by Blue Apron is for nights like that. These are the pre-made meals of your dreams. At least 20 grams of protein. No artificial flavors or colors. No chopping, no cleanup, no guilt. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with someone you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
I think high school is the right fit for me, the perfect fit for me. And, you know, developing young men, I think you can do a little bit more and mold them just a little bit more, a little more formative stage of their lives. And the connections I have formed, you know, with not only players, but their families, you know, I think I chose the right route for me.
And our guest this week is Paul Romanczyk. He is the head boys basketball coach at Malvern Prep. He is a former Penn Quaker star. And Paul, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me, man.
So as we are recording this early May, have you had enough time, enough distance to kind of catalog this past season for your group and what you need, where you can improve? We were talking, you got five kids graduating. Like, have you kind of put 2024, 2025 to bed, or is that still a work in progress?
No, I think as a coach, you know, things about the past season tend to linger a little bit at times and you know, what you can do to get better. And so that's an ongoing process. But I do think enough time has passed to know that it was a special season, you know, and at this point in my career, it's certainly not just about the wins, but it's about the connections and the relationships that you have with the young men. And like I had said to you before, the seniors on our team were a special group. It was a group that I came in with 4 years ago. I was it was my first year. It was their freshman year. And just a terrific group of young men that will be a success in life. But I thought we had some big wins. I think down the stretch, we stumbled a little bit, ran into some injuries and things of that nature. But all in all, I would definitely catalog it as a success overall.
And you talk about this group you kind of came in with. When you decided to get back into coaching, and we'll talk about that, like, why was the Malvern Prep job the right one at the right time?
Yeah, I don't think there were too many jobs that I would have jumped back into so readily. I think the Malvern Prep community is a fun one to be a part of, a special one. Wonderful campus that looks different than the 4 years, you know, from the beginning of my tenure to now, with all the upgrades and new buildings and new turf fields and just the leadership. You know, we have a strong leadership and just a faith-based community that I was part of, you know, as a freshman and sophomore at Malvern, and still some of my best friends to this day are guys that graduated from Malvern. So I had a great feel for the school already, and it was on a very, very short list. I missed coaching. I missed the sidelines in my time away. I thought it'd be a little bit easier just to step away and follow my kids, but it grew to be more and more difficult. So when this opportunity, you know, was offered up to me, I really couldn't pass it up.
And you had taken some time to be with family.
Yes.
After a long run at Carroll.
Yes.
As the head coach. Did the time away, two, 3 years?
It was 3 years, yeah.
Yeah. Did it change how you approach coaching at all?
Yeah, I think so. I think more so than anything, the kids today and what they got coming at them, the pressures they have, the social media, the phones, you know, some of the shift in the culture and the parenting, I think that has changed more so than maybe I think I had to change with the times a little bit. And it was nice to be able to, for those 3 years, you know, I went out and, you know, I obviously still had some friends that were coaching, and I might go to one of their practices or I'd go to a few games, but those competitive juices were still flowing in me, and I knew that I probably would make a return. It just would have to be, you know, at the right spot at the right time. And for an opportunity to come up at Malvern and then my own sons to come over the year after, I tell everyone, you know, I spent, you know, what, 15, 16, 17 years coaching other people's knuckleheads. I get to coach my own now for a couple of years, which has been, you know, challenging, but also special and a lot of fun, and times that I hope, you know, me and Cooper and Colin can really look back on and say that we're, you know, some of the best years of our time together.
Now, you mentioned you played at Malvern in high school as freshman, sophomore, and then you went to Carroll.
Yes.
Where you graduated from.
Correct.
And the order's been reversed as a coach. You started at Carroll, had all the success, and then now you're at Malvern. Does going back to coach at a place where you went to school, do you feel like in either situation, did it add extra pressure? Because you already kind of had an imprint on a program, and you're now coming back in a different role. I always am curious if going back to a place is different than maybe if you had just started at a different school.
Yeah, I don't know if pressure would be the way I would put it. I think there was an excitement just with the familiarity of me walking the halls. Like when I started off at Carroll, I got the job, and I think I turned 24 right after that. So as a 24-year-old, there were still a lot of teachers that were still in the building that I had, you know, in class, or they had me in class, I guess I should say. So that was – I felt a built-in sense of support right away from the administration at Carroll and the teachers at Carroll and the faculty, and teachers that I had really good relationships with would come to games. And it was a great feeling to have that. And, you know, at that time, Carroll had started – getting back to being relevant, I guess is the word, to being relevant in the boys basketball arena in the Philadelphia Catholic League, which is very difficult, obviously, as you know. I mean, it's a beast. So we had just started being relevant again, and I took it as a challenge. Was there pressure? I mean, maybe, but at 24, 25, 26 years old, I wanted a challenge, and I love the sport of basketball. I was very passionate about it. I never thought even for a day I would ever be a coach. I got bit by that bug and loved it. But I don't know that it was necessarily pressure. I was looking to build upon what, you know, the path that was laid out before me, and with my coach Tom Inglesby in high school, who was a terrific coach. And so it was a challenge, and it was fun. It was great.
Getting bit by the coaching bug, like, was it something, the opportunity came and you thought, oh, this would be fun? Or did somebody talk to you about it? Or once you're kind of done playing, do you still need to be connected to the game? Like, what's the on-ramp to get into coaching if it wasn't something that was really on your radar going along?
How much time do we have here, man? No, so when I stopped playing at Penn, I thought I was done, naively thought I was done with playing, and got into the working world. I worked at Arthur Anderson, which was one of the Big Five prior to the Enron scandal and everything, and quite frankly, I didn't enjoy it. It wasn't for me. It might have been more so that I just wasn't done with basketball. And I remember this conversation vividly. I'm driving home from one of my jobs at Arthur Anderson in the audit department, and I called Coach Dunphy up and I said, Coach, I'm just struggling. You know, I'm a few months in here, can't quite find my footing. You know, part of me thinks I'm not done playing. Like, can I play? And he goes, Paul, you're 22, not 42. Of course you can play. And I've told that story so many times, and now I'm 47. Like, when I used to tell that story, I was maybe in my 30s, and, you know, 42 still seemed a little bit further away. But so I played for a year. It was great. I played for a year in Spain. I really enjoyed myself, but I kind of got it out of my system. I didn't necessarily want to go back for a second year. And then I was like, well, I know I need basketball as part of my life. I know that now. I can't just quit cold turkey, and I'm not the kind of guy that's just going to really enjoy just playing rec league basketball around the city here. So I tried coaching out. I once again went to Coach Dunphy and said, what do you think? He said, well, Speedy Morris just got the job at Prep. Maybe you talk to him. Why don't you talk to your alma mater, Archbishop Carroll? Why don't you start at those two places? So I did. And, you know, Prep was a little far, and Coach Morris had kind of had his staff set. He said he would take me on, but it just didn't seem quite like the right fit. And Carroll was gracious enough to – the coach at the time was a guy by the name of John Rowe, and he was gracious enough to accept me on as part of his staff as a varsity assistant. And I said, I would love to – potentially be a head coach. Do you have the freshman or JV job open? I would like to see if I would enjoy running my own program. And he gave me the opportunity at, I was maybe 22, 23 at that time, to be a head coach of JV and a varsity assistant. And without that year, I don't know that I would have been ready to just jump into being the varsity head coach the very next year.
When you start coaching, did you know what you didn't know?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I always say you need to be a lifelong learner if you want to coach at any level. Well, if you want to be a good coach, I should say, at any level. The one thing that stands out as far as what I did not know early on was you get so, at least I did, you get so wrapped up as a player as doing your job and doing your job at the best of your ability. So I knew a lot of plays that we had run at Penn or Carroll or, you know, whatever I had seen. And I knew maybe where I had to be on the court and what I was supposed to do. Was it down screen at this time? Was it post up at that time? I didn't necessarily know the big picture and necessarily what the play, you know, what the point guard was supposed to be doing and the pace that he was supposed to be playing at. And so that was something I really had to get better at. I thought I always had a decent feel for defensively what we were supposed to be doing. I think Coach Dunphy was a large part of that and my background there. And I tried to, you know, you can't be other coaches, but you could try your best to emulate what they bring to the table. And I think the one thing about Coach Dunphy was that, you know, if you played hard, which sounds simple, but is a skill. If you played really hard and you defended and showed that you cared about your teammates and were in the right spot and he could trust you there, he gave you freedom on the offensive end. So I felt like that's how I wanted to play and that's how I wanted to coach. So I tried my best early on. But once again, I mean, to go back to your question, no, I'm still learning to this day. Maybe I wasn't quite humble enough to say that early on, but I'm definitely at that stage in my life where, yeah, I'm more than willing to listen and find new ways to play and new ways to do things that might benefit our team.
Growing up, was basketball your number one sport?
For sure. I mean, my father played at North Catholic and at Drexel. I had heard stories about the Big Five and the Palestra and, you know, and him and his teams. And I thought there was no other place for me than to play in the Catholic League and to play at the Palestra. For it to work out like that and for me to be able to call the Palestra my home for 4 years was really special. But yeah, I mean, I would tag along with my father to his, you know, his rec league games, you know, all across the city when he was younger. And I was younger, you know, I remember different parks and different, you know, rec centers throughout the city. And his buddies that he played with in high school and college became like my uncles. I was one of the only kids, you know, going to the games and shooting on the side baskets when I could. And, you know, I played baseball. I loved baseball. I still love baseball. But basketball was definitely, you know, a tick above all the other sports.
When did the idea of playing college basketball, every kid dreams, and obviously, you know, with the Palestra and sure, that history there. But when does it go from that would be incredible to I think I'm going to be able to do this? And I don't mean necessarily Penn, but like that you were going to be able to play at that level.
Yeah, I always had the confidence that I could play college basketball. And I tried to carry myself with that confidence and you know, try to prove I was the best player on the court, even if I wasn't. That was always, you know, just how competitive I was. I think it starts to become reality, you know, as a freshman, I was maybe 6'2"-ish, and, you know, a 6'2 power forward isn't necessarily on Division I radars. But then the next year, I'm 6'4", 6'4", 6'5", so now it becomes maybe a little more realistic. And then, you know, this day and age, you're 6'4", 6'5", you need to start really developing perimeter skills. And I was decent with the ball, but I never really developed a great jump shot or anything like that. So then I grow to 6'6", my junior year. I'm athletic, and now it's becoming more of a reality, and you start to get, you know, interest from colleges and, you know, where do I fit? And that's when I was now at Archbishop Carroll, who had a great program, and we're playing the likes of Roman Catholic. And I'm in front of big stages almost on a game-by-game basis. And not that I was playing great on every big stage, but I was playing well on enough of the big stages to start to get some feedback. Like, Paul, you're going to be a college basketball player. It's just at what level and where do you want to go and how far and things like that. So I think once you get a little taste of that and people saying, like, you could be this, I always had a decent work ethic, but then the work ethic just starts to, you grow a little bit more of a hunger about yourself and, put myself in a really good spot where Penn came along actually late in the process. It was like the middle of my senior year. Coach Fran O'Hanlon came to recruit me or came to see us at a tournament down in Delaware, Slam Dunk to the Beach, which was a big tournament then. And I had a really good game against a top level team, St. Raymond's from the Bronx. And so Penn came in and they were top 25 at the time. You're talking, Jerome Allen and Matt Maloney and Scott Kegler and Eric Moore and Sean Trice and, those great teams. And that was the only top 25 team that was really recruiting me. I mean, I had some really, good programs, but to be in the Ivy League, the Palestra, the Wharton School, I mean, it seemed kind of like a no-brainer, But that's kind of the origin story of where I thought I could be a college basketball player.
You get to Penn. Is it a giant step? Like when you start practicing and working out, is it like, wow, or did you feel relatively comfortable that you could hit the ground running?
No, comfort would definitely not be the word. I kind of got bounced around. I was very thin. I'd say maybe 180, 185 pounds my freshman year. And I would get bounced around by all the juniors and seniors and told, you don't have this game after waiting 2-3 games. You don't have this game. You got next game. So I said, man, I don't. And then in our workouts in the preseason, and I had nights where, quite frankly, I mean, I would cry to my parents saying, I don't know if I can play here. And that just wasn't me. I was always pretty confident, but I didn't know that I would be able to make it work there. And, my parents were so wonderful and talked me out of the doldrums that I would get in. And then I just got more understanding that a lot of freshmen were going through that. Whether they played sports or not, just going through like, is this for me? Is this school for me? Will I be able to make it here? So I started to get that type of feel, but no, by no means was I thinking, man, I can do this. I can play on this team until practice started. Once practice started, I started putting together some good practices and saying, I can play here. I can definitely play here. And I think I got a sense that Coach Dunphy felt like, he saw my value on the court. I mean, he recruited me. He knew what I could do. But I kind of came in with the thought that if I could get through my freshman, maybe I start to see the court as a sophomore, junior at the latest. That was my realistic expectation, is hopefully play as a junior or senior.
When do you feel like you started to hit your stride as a college basketball player?
Well, I think, I tell people this. I don't know that I was ready when I got the news that I was going to be a starting player my freshman year. But things fell in place for me. I was more like the eighth, ninth man most of my freshman year. And then midway through my freshman year, the starting power forward quit. And then two other guys that I was competing with for time at the forward position, they failed off the team. You wouldn't think that would happen at an Ivy League school, but it did. So things really kind of fell into place for me. And I don't know that Coach Dunphy had too many options other than to play me. So, but if it wasn't for that, I mean, it was trial by fire for a just turned 18-year-old freshman that was thrown in there. And if I didn't have that time, I don't know that I would have been quite ready as a sophomore. But now as a sophomore, I had now put on weight. I had worked on my game all summer. I kind of knew what I needed to improve on because of that freshman year and going through that. But I thank the coaching staff at Penn and jokingly, I thank, you know, the guy that quit in front of me and the other two guys that gave me that opportunity, because then I took it and ran with it. And so I'd say sophomore year is when I thought, you know, I can actually be pretty good in this league. And, you know, as long as I work hard, and I had great teammates too, that were around me. So we had some fun years.
To that point, favorite memories from your time at Penn, a lot of success.
Yeah. Favorite memories. So this day and age, I feel like the court storming is a little overblown at times, right? And there's a lot of talk about that and the dangers of that and all that. But there were three instances where the court was stormed my senior year, and I think they were all warranted. The first one was we had lost to Kansas in the beginning of the year. Kansas was, I think, the number maybe six ranked team in the nation, and they actually came to the Palestra, which was unheard of. But Coach Dunphy was friends with Roy Williams, who was the coach at the time, and I believe the broadcasters of Kansas hadn't been to the Palestra. They had been a lot of the, you know, famous arenas, but hadn't been to the Palestra. So they came in, and we lost a close one by like three. And our very next game, and Coach Dumpf did not duck any teams whatsoever. Our very next game was Temple at home at the Palestra, and they were number seven in the nation. And you're talking Pepe Sanchez and Lynn Greer and Rashid Brokenborough and Leonard Stewart and just some really, really good players from Temple. And we beat them in overtime, and the fans rushed the court. So that's one that stands out. The second one was we beat Cornell on senior night, and we had actually come from behind and won and clinched at least a share of the title. And then the third court storming was at Princeton, and this comes on the heels of, I don't know if you remember this game, but my senior year, we were up 33-9 at the Palestra against Princeton. At one point in time, I think we were up 29-3, and our crowd was chanting, "You have 3 points, you have 3 points," you know, and we thought there was no way we could lose. We were going to blow them out, and they came back and beat us. And that was just such a crushing defeat. But to see what our team did after that and how close we got, and we were terrific the whole rest of the season. And then it came down to that last game at Princeton for the Ivy League title. And we kind of showed that first game was a fluke, and we beat them by, I think it was by like 25. And it was one of the worst, if not the worst, loss at Jadwin in Princeton history. And our fans stormed the court at Jadwin. So those three memories stick out. Just being able to be part of the NCAA tournament that year was special as well. It only lasted one game, unfortunately, but just to be part of the NCAA tournament after, unfortunately, coming in second to Princeton all three of my years leading up to that, you know, to do that in senior years with a great group of guys, and those easily were my best memories.
So we talked about you coming on board at Carroll. When you take over the program, how long do you feel like it took before you had your arms around what it meant to be a high school head coach?
Yeah, I definitely think I was. I'm thrilled that Archbishop Carroll thought I was ready and tabbed me to be the coach. But yeah, it certainly took a little bit of time to understand the dynamics of where I could be successful, specifically recruiting student athletes to Carroll. And, you know, because the times had changed from obviously when I grew up and even a little bit before that, where, you know, you had to go to your archdiocesan Catholic school. There was an open enrollment. And then even when I was at, teams were still made up, even though it was open enrollment my last couple years when I was in high school, there's still, you know, there were a lot of coaches that wanted to keep the kids that were in their local parishes and have them go. So there was still a lot of that. But at Carroll, I you know, unfortunately for me, it was very difficult to attract those kids that were right around, you know, the main line area, Radnor, Lower Merion, you know, up and down Conestoga, like that general area, Tredyffrin, Easttown. It just, kids were going to a lot of the private schools. So, and we've got such great private schools in the area. So the Malverns of the world, you know, LaSalle, St. Joe's Prep, Haverford School, all those really, you know, high academic, great campuses, you know, so I had to kind of learn, like, where am I going to be successful? And, you know, I was able to connect with some people that believed in me and helped me out in the recruiting game. And that's really what it's about, if, you know, is about connecting with people and those people seeing the value in you coaching their son, coaching their nephew, coaching a kid that they coached, you know, in grade school and saying, you know, listen, Coach Paul can get you to the next level. And you know, if you want to be a college basketball player, this is what. So it was really about those relationships. I'd say it took me a few years though, for sure. And then I kind of found my niche of where kids that I could recruit, that parents would believe in me, would embrace Carroll as a good school for their kids to go to. Because as much as I love basketball and how important it is in my life, that was still only a small part of their being in high school. I mean, they still had to enjoy being part of the community and being part of the school from 8, 9 in the morning till 3 in the afternoon until practice started, you know.
We need to take a break. We will return to our conversation with Paul Romanczyk in just a few moments. But right now, I want to remind you that One-on-One with Matt Leon is sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Now's the time for a great deal on a new Honda. Check out the Honda Prologue, Accord Hybrid, or Civic Hybrid. For a limited time, you can get 0.99% APR on a 2025 Prologue, a 2.99% APR on a 2025 Accord Hybrid, or a 4.99% APR on a 2025 Civic Hybrid. Contact your local Honda dealer today. Offers applicable only to well-qualified buyers. And now on One-on-One with Matt Leon, let's get back to our conversation with Malvern Prep head boys basketball coach Paul Romanczyk.
About halfway through your run at Carroll, you win the state title in 09, mm-hmm. I think it was.
Yeah.
What's that run like? And if I had talked to you prior to that season, would you have thought that I don't want to say, oh, we're definitely going to win. But would you have thought, like, you know, if things come together well, these kids work hard, the ceiling's pretty high for this group.
I thought we had a really good team. I thought that, you know, at that point in time, Newman Garetti was the team to beat, not only in the Catholic League, but in our division, our classification of states, they were in the same classification as us, 3A. And we had not beat them to that point. In my tenure, they'd always gotten us. But I thought I had a good group. You know, I had some great leadership. You know, a player by the name of Andre Wilburn, great kid from Chester, who believed in me, and I believed in him. And there was a kid, Kashif Festus, who was a terrific player. He was a senior. We had some really good leadership, and we had some great young talent too. A kid by the name of Wanye Green, who was the all-time leading scorer at Carroll for a long time until Derek Jones passed him. He was a sophomore, really talented, coming into his own. Junior class, we had a kid, DJ Irving, ended up going to Boston University and scoring over 1,000 points, and was a terrific all Catholic type player. The kid Ben Mingledoe. We just had a lot of really talented players, so I knew we could make a run. And at that point in time, the PIAA state tournament was still new. It was the very first year for the Catholic League, so the Holy Grail, you know, was still playing at the Palestra in the Final Four, and then potentially playing in the championship if you could do that. And we lost to Roman Catholic in the semifinals that year at the Palestra. And it was crushing. If I remember correctly, we had beaten them during the regular season, but we lost to them at the Palestra. And it was tough. I mean, the first couple practices after that loss, because that was the end-all be-all for years, you know, in the Catholic League, was that was it. Once you were done at the Palestra, your season was done. So the first couple practices, it was difficult. The guys didn't want to be there. They were still licking their wounds and, you know, pity party, all that stuff. But then, you know, I think they came around and realized, listen, we still have an opportunity to play basketball and to potentially win a championship here if we get it going. And that run ended up being great. I mean, we didn't play great our first round game and just squeaked by. I think it was Phoenixville. And then we got going and started playing really well. And of course, we run into Newman Garetti in the quarterfinals. We knew that was, you know, not, I mean, everyone says don't look ahead and one game at a time. But of course, everyone looked ahead and saw that was a potential matchup. And we had already lost to them, I believe, twice that year. and we were facing them at Archbishop Ryan, and I mean, we played great basketball. I remember DJ Irving hits a three-quarter court shot. Once he did that, he hit a three-quarter court shot at the end of the third quarter buzzer and put us up maybe 7 or 6 or something like that. And I thought, I mean, how do we lose the game now that, you know, now that he does that? So we end up winning that game, which was huge. And then, you know, we win in the semifinals. I think it was York Suburban I think we might have beat them by double digits. And we it didn't really matter who we were going to face in the championship. We felt pretty good that we were clicking now. And we were going to come away with the title. And it was neat. We played at the Bryce Jordan Center. You know, the Giant Center is great in Hershey. And we have been there, too, a couple times after that. But it was nice to be there at Penn State and win a championship. But, yeah, that's you know, my high school coach, Tom Inglesby, you know, when we won the Catholic League title my senior year, you know, he wrote on the board before our game, you know, he wrote championships are forever. And I wrote that on the board going into that state championship game. And it is. It couldn't be more true. I still, you know, keep in touch with a lot of those guys from the state championship team. And yeah, it'll certainly be remembered forever.
Now, you went to a couple other state finals and had a ton of success at Carroll. Like, past that state championship run, what are a couple of your other favorite memories?
Yeah, so we go and we get to the state championship, I'm going to say 2013, and 2015. We had a great run in those years with Derek Jones, who's now with the Clippers, you know, which is it's pretty special to go and see a kid that you saw as a freshman develop into an NBA player. And to play a small part in that role. So just my relationship with him over the years and a young man by the name of Ernest, the Flack P, who went on to play for Coach Dunphy at Temple. I had the opportunity to coach him for 3 years, and what a special young man he was, and mature and thoughtful and caring and you know, hardworking. He was an absolute joy to be around. And those teams, we did a lot of traveling. And we're invited to a lot of top flight tournaments because of the amount of talent that we had in the program. So that was neat. I mean, that was something different that we hadn't really done. We'd kind of stayed in our local area, even though we were a really good team. We were generally in the Philadelphia area for most of our stuff. But then when, you know, when Derek got the national recognition that he was getting, we started getting invited to these, like, the City of Palms tournament, where, you know, you got Montverde in there, and, you know, the likes of, you know, I know that this guy's name isn't necessarily the most well thought of name in Philadelphia, but a guy by the name of Ben Simmons was at the tournament, and Jaylen Brown was down there with his team. So those memories were pretty cool. Like, my, you know, during that time period when we were traveling around and we had a team, you know, we had a few teams that were really, really good. You know, that's when my boys, my own sons, were now, you know, back in the locker rooms with us and in the starting lineup, handshake line or whatever you call it. I mean, and you know, just to have them start to be part of our journey was neat. I mean, you know, there was always, during that time frame, you would announce the starting lineup and there'd be a huddle and guys would dance in the huddle and stuff. There were a few years when that happened at the college level, NBA and high school, it trickled down to high school. And my own sons were in there at, like, you know, 5 through 9 years old, you know, dancing in the center circle. And so, you know, it's not like there's like one or two games that stand out. It's more of just like the faces and names and players and my own sons and my own family really embracing being part of the Carroll basketball family.
We mentioned all the success, and you do eventually step away in 2018 mm-hmm. for being the head coach at Carroll. Was that something that you started to see coming? Was it something that you just kind of had a day where you kind of looked around like, boy, I might be missing a lot of stuff with the family? Like, how did that decision come about?
Yeah, it wasn't one day. It was my last couple years at Carroll. I think there was, I'm not going to say it wasn't fun. It was still fun, but I think I started to lose a little bit of the joy in, you know, in the day-to-day stuff. And I tell people that the most difficult thing for me was missing, you know, missing things that my kids were doing, Cooper and Colin and Riley. And I thought that at that time, I thought, you know, no big deal. It's only, you know, a Little League baseball game, or it's only a CYO basketball game. And, you know, I'm not going to miss stuff when they're in high school. That's what I kept telling myself. And that was a lie. I mean, that it hurt me to have to hear how they did, how they played, how they, you know. And I didn't really, you know, I knew I was kind of losing a little bit of that joy anyway. And then coupled with, you know, me not being there nearly as much as I would have liked. I was still there. It just sometimes even when I was there, I wasn't present because I was thinking about things that were on my mind as far as the team and what was going on at Carroll at that time. So that's what was best for me. And I had had conversations with Kelly as to when I would step away. And she goes, Paul, it's always going to be difficult because there's always going to be that one kid that you're like, man, I could just stay around for him. And that's what I had to walk in. I called a meeting. I had to walk in the locker room at Carroll. And there was one kid who was a junior at the time. And I told him this after I met with the whole team, a kid by the name of Luke House. I said, you know, I know that there's always going to be a kid that it was going to be difficult to leave. And you're that kid. You know, I said, he was just such a gym rat, coach's dream type of player that really worked on his game and no nonsense, low maintenance, high character, just a great, great kid. He ended up having a great senior year. And then, you know, a few years later, he ends up playing at Drexel and playing pretty well for Drexel. And now he's playing professionally overseas. So, but, you know, that pained me to leave him. But yeah, it was more of a month's thing than something that just hit me.
What's it like when you're not coaching at first? Because I mean, not, you know, once the season's over, you can kind of convince yourself that life hasn't changed that much as you go through. But once you get to like October and you're not setting up sets, you're not going through the roster, like, was that weird? Was it tough? Was it easier than you thought? Like, where were you?
You're 100% right. I mean, it didn't hit me right away because, you know, but once the season was over, I was going to take a break anyway, whether I was the coach or not. I would have been off at least a little bit until the summer. I think it started hitting me when, you know, that next year it was difficult, but I went to a couple Carroll games and, you know, and I missed it. I knew I missed it. You know, maybe I told people, yeah, no, you know, I'm good and, you know, it's fine. But I certainly missed it almost right away. And I didn't look at it and go, man, I made a mistake. I didn't regret what I did and stepping away. But I'd be lying if I said I didn't miss it. It was difficult. But like you said, I think the difficult part started to set in once it was, you know, preparing for the season ahead. So like you said, September, October, November, in that time frame. Then when the game started and then when the Catholic League starts, and it just started getting tougher and tougher. But finally, I brought myself to go to some games and be there to support, you know, some of the kids that I really cared about at Carroll. And, you know, it was fun, but it was also a little bit painful.
I'm curious, and no disrespect to the staff that was there after you left, but when you're watching the games as a fan at Carroll, and they're all kids that you know. Mm-hmm. Is it hard to go, oh God, why are you isolating him in this situation? Stuff like that. Yeah, I mean, I probably didn't vocalize it to anyone,
no.
But in your head, was it difficult to kind of watch? And not that they're doing a bit, but it's just maybe not what you would do in a situation.
Yeah, I have such a respect for the guy who took over after me, Francis Bowe, such a wonderful guy and a good coach. And we've actually become pretty good friends. But I always said to myself, you know, when I would go to a game, like I wouldn't want the previous coach like sitting right behind me or anything. So I made sure I did not sit anywhere near the bench. You know, I sat, you know, as far away as I could and just cheered them on. But the one thing I didn't realize about coaching that when I first started is that once you become a coach, at least for me, is I have a tough time turning off the coach brain. So I look at the game from a different lens than just going and being able to sit at a basketball game and enjoy the game. you know, not that I'm not enjoying the game. It's more so, but I'm always thinking about what can happen here, what this coach is trying to do versus what that coach is trying to do. And, you know, so that was definitely, that's, you know, that always plays in my mind.
So the 3 years when you're not coaching, when does the idea that maybe there's an on-ramp to get back in, and when does that start to emerge? Or is it the Malvern prep opportunity kind of accelerates any thinking on that line?
Yeah. You know, my kids at the time were at Episcopal Academy, and there was a coach at the time, Craig Conlon, was there. And Craig had become a friend over the years. And I told him, listen, I'm not looking to get back into coaching, but if you'd like me to come to a practice or come to a game and give you notes. And he goes, that would be great, because he had even asked if I wanted to be part of his staff. I said, I don't know that I'm ready for that. You know, I give me maybe a year or two, and I'd like to just completely be away from it and make sure I'm at, you know, all my kids' stuff. And I don't want to be torn and not be making 100% of the, you know, of your practices. So I did that a little bit for him, and enjoyed that. And then, unfortunately for Craig, you know, Episcopal decided to go in a different direction, and they opened up the head coaching position. Once again, I don't know that I was 100% ready to jump back in, but I went, whoa, this is my kid's school. They were in middle school at the time. They were maybe sixth grade, fifth grade, in that range, Cooper and Colin. But I said, well, it's my kid's school. I've become a part of the community. I've been a parent here now for 7 years. I think this might be a good opportunity. You know, I'm fooling myself. I'm saying I'm not missing it. So I interviewed for the job. I didn't get it, which, you know, like I said, I don't know that I was ready. So it might have been a blessing in disguise. And I thought, well, maybe that's a sign that it's not meant to be. I'm not meant to coach anymore. And I kind of just was okay with that. I was bitter as a competitive person. I was bitter I didn't get the job, but I thought maybe it's not what's best for me. And then the Malvern thing opened up a couple of years after that. So, and once again, Malvern was on a very, very short list, maybe even a list of one schools at that point in time. The only thing that complicated things was my kids were at Episcopal, and Episcopal is one of their rival schools. So I said, you know, when that opportunity arose, I said to my wife, I go, the only hesitation I have is that I don't want to be the coach at Malvern with the kid, with my sons at Episcopal. Like, they need to be okay with moving schools. And she goes, I'll talk to them, Paul, not you. I said, okay, fair enough. And she talked to them. My older son, Cooper, was on board. He was excited. And then my younger guy, Colin, who's a little more of the social butterfly of the family, he was a little worried about his friends. What about my friends? But it's been a great move for both of them, and been a great move for me. And once again, just a really special community at Malvern that has accepted me and my family, and I couldn't be more grateful.
Do you feel like when you came back on board at Malvern Prep, was it like riding a bike as far as
no
the coaching, or was there a transition to getting back into the grind and getting back into the routine?
Yeah, definitely a transition. At Carroll, every single year, you just kind of, you know, you knew the kids from the previous year. I was going into a situation where, yeah, I knew a good portion of the alumni and the administration, and I had a comfort level with the campus and things of that nature, and what I was getting into a little bit with the league. But, you know, you still have to win the trust of the players, the respect of the families, and you know, that's what I wanted to connect with the seniors. I knew I was only going to be around them for a year, but I thought, man, if we could really have a special year where they could help me build this thing and bridge this gap here of, you know, connection with the younger players, I'm quite sure over the years, maybe not right away, but over the years, I can win over the younger kids. But I only have a set amount of time here, and the seniors can really help me out, or they can make my life difficult and say, man, you know, the old coach was like this and you're not like him. And so I wanted to win them over. That was, in my opinion, the biggest stepping stone, the first hurdle, so to speak. And, it was great. I had, you know, some great leadership from that senior class my first year. Kids by the name of Tyler Lauder and Joey Vandergeese were terrific. I mean, such great young men that bought in to what I was trying to get across, and they were able to then get some of the younger guys, buying in as well. And I don't know that people thought that we were going to be one of the top teams right away, and we were. We shared the title with Penn Charter that year in my very first year, but it was because of that relationship building from the very beginning. I'd say the basketball part of things was, I don't want to sound arrogant, but I'd say that was the easier part of the equation, because I had done it for a long time, and things were changing, and now different systems, and guys were playing five out, and the pace and the space and all those MBA-isms in the college world was trickling down. But I think it was still a lot of the same type of stuff that we were trying to get accomplished, and, you know, hard work and defending and helping each other out, being good teammates. A lot of those lessons still resonated.
I'm curious, given the success you've had, and we mentioned state title at Carroll, a couple of appearances in the state championship game, I'd imagine your phone rang, and given that you were a high-level Division I player, did you ever think of college? Was that, from a coaching standpoint, was that ever something you maybe put your foot in the water, or somebody said, hey, would you be interested? Was there a conscious decision that high school is where I want to go, or is that just kind of how it has developed?
Yeah, it's a little bit of how it's developed. Going back to my initial jump into coaching, I had done that 1 year as the JV coach at Carroll and varsity assistant before I became the head coach. I called down to Coach Dunphy. He had an opening on his staff. It was the third assistant's job, which is at that time, I don't know if it still is, but it was an unpaid, it was like a volunteer assistant was the third coach. You coached you were the head coach of the JV, and you were the varsity assistant. They still had a JV program at that time. And, you learned a lot on the job, but you weren't paid. So you kind of had to have a side gig, or they paid you through the camp a little bit, but you could only really do that job for a year or two. And I was young enough that I could get away with doing that maybe for a year or so. Didn't have a family, wasn't married at the time. So I talked to Coach Dunphy, and it was almost like a father saying, I see better things for you, kid. Like, I don't know if you want to be, you know. So he pretty much tried to talk me out of it, but then hired me. So I was an assistant at Penn for all of about, I'd say, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, when Carroll had forced the head coach prior to me to resign, and reached out to me and said, we're only reaching out to you and Tom Inglesby to see if Tom would maybe come back, or if you wanted to be the head coach. They said, we'll open it up, but you're the only two that we're reaching out to. So I said, wow, I mean, have my own program at 23, 24 years old at the high school level, or just get my foot in the door here at college. I was getting ready to sit for the CPA exam, you know, and I walked into Coach Dunphy's office the next day. I knocked on the door, and before I even said anything, he goes, Carroll reached out to you, right? And I said, how'd you know? He goes, well, they would be foolish not to. And I was so nervous getting ready to go into his, he had just pretty much tried to talk me out of it, then hired me. And now I'm going in like 3 weeks, 4 weeks later saying, I'm going to step away from this job you just gave me. And I couldn't put Coach Dunphy any higher in my opinions and my eyes, and just such a level of respect and love for the man and what he's meant for me. I was so nervous going in to tell him that I wasn't going to coach with him. And he said, I think you should do it. If that's where your heart is. I interviewed for the job. I was still, going down to Penn and fulfilling my duties down there. So I lasted maybe 6 weeks. And then the journey of being a high school coach started. You know, over the years, I've kicked the tires a couple more times. Coach Dunphy had an opening at Temple. We talked about it a little bit. My brother-in-law, when he got the Northwestern job, we talked about it. Neither instance, it was really, the timing was a little difficult, and it just didn't seem like it was the right fit. But for sure, I've had those thoughts, and I've had, a couple opportunities, but I think high school is the right fit for me, the perfect fit for me. And, you know, developing young men, I think you can do a little bit more and mold them just a little bit more, a little more formative stage of their lives. And the connections I have formed, you know, with not only players, but their families, you know, I think I chose the right route for me.
Final question, favorite part of what you do?
Well, I think I'd piggyback on what I just said. I think it's, you get so close with these players. And you dream for them. You want to help them succeed, and achieve their wildest dreams. I would say my favorite part of the job is helping them find a good fit for college, and then either going to watch them play in college, and now being a fan instead of being the guy that you know threw out constructive criticism and put my foot up there. To then see them succeed and do well, that just warms my heart. And I've received calls and texts from players before as freshmen saying, "Coach, I am just so much more prepared than any of the other freshmen that came in at this school. And, you know, I want to thank you and how much you mean it." That's why I coach. And that's my why. That's the favorite part of the job, like you said.
Paul Romanczyk, thanks so much for coming in. This was great.
Yeah, thank you, Matt.
And that will do it for this week's episode of One-on-One with Matt Leon, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. Want to thank Paul Romanczyk, head boys basketball coach at Malvern Prep, for coming in studio and being our guest this week. Now, if you like the show, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, do us a favor, leave us a rating and a review. You can follow the show on X at One-on-One Pod. You can follow me there as well at Matt Leon 1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next time when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.